Starting a business and keeping it going requires a lot of elements, including both luck and skill. Our business segment, The Ground Floor, visits with companies based in the region about what it took to get them started and growing. This week, we talk about a business whose very name bespeaks rising fortunes. Ascentron, based in White City, is a manufacturer, and a manufacturer of intricate electronic product components made to very tight specifications. Take some precision, clearly. Let's hear what else it takes. David Hollingsworth is co-founder, co-owner, and vice president of business development at Ascentron and our guest in the studio in The Ground Floor. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So low to medium volume electronic manufacturing projects is what you talk about online, is it consumer goods? Is it goods to make consumer goods? What is it?
Well, it's hard to explain. So the easiest way to do it is Apple and Hewlett-Packard sell computers, but they really don't build their own computers. They outsource that manufacturing to large manufacturing companies offshore, and so we work with much smaller companies. We don't have any of our own products, but we build other people's products for them. One of the easiest examples is we build all the entertainment systems that go into Gulfstream aircraft. So all the LCD screens that come up on all the entertainment systems on that. We also build a heart monitoring system that you wear around your neck, and it monitors your heartbeat. If you're having a problem, it downloads that data over the cellular network to the doctor's office, and they get an alert. So, again, we don't build anything of our own, but we build for customers all over the Western United States. We build their products for them.
So Ascentron makes the product, but somebody else's name goes onto it.
Correct. They've done all the design work. We take their designs. We buy the components that they've spec'd in. We build it to their requirements, do the testing, and then deliver a product to them.
So they have to make very, very detailed descriptions, it seems like, of the stuff. You have to have everything has got to be right down to the last millimeter, it sounds like.
They do. They've got complex circuit boards inside their products. They've got integrated circuits. And some of these parts now that we're putting on the circuit boards are like a grain of sand. So very small, hard to see, a lot of robotics involved.
Is there an upper limit to the kind of order you'll take? I mean, 10,000, 100,000, something, where you'll just say, yeah, it's bigger than we can handle?
Well, we can build just about anything, but the higher the volume, the more likely it is to go offshore. So the bigger volume projects, you know, go offshore. That's kind of how our company was born. Previous company used to build some high-volume electronics, and the dot-com bust, you know, some companies went out of business, and at the same time, all the high-volume manufacturing moved offshore. Apple, you know, doesn't build phones here. Hewlett-Packard doesn't build computers here.
So Cynthia Scher, who helps us assemble this segment and recruits the guests for it, tells us that the company started out of a death experience. So did some other company's death lead to the birth of Ascentron?
It did. On 2000-2001 was a dot-com bust. The previous company at our location was about a $30 million a year manufacturer. And they, in 12 months, they went from doing $30 million a year to $3 million a year. So lost 90% of their work in essentially 2001. So on Tuesday, January 8th, 2002, we had a manager's meeting, and the owners of the company came in and essentially fired us all, and we're going to shut it down. Which was a little bit of a shock, but, you know, we knew things were bad, and so they came in and did that. Rick Smith was the president of the company at the time, and I was handling the sales and marketing. And so essentially that night we went out and had a few beers with another manager or two and started talking about hatching an idea to save the business. We contacted the owners that had shut it down on Wednesday, had a few more beers Wednesday night. By Friday we owned a company.
It sounds like at least a six-beer startup.
Yeah, there was quite a few beers involved.
Uh-huh. So it's obviously a much smaller company than it was. Did it start at that 10% level of the original?
It started at $3 million a year that first year. We called people and as we were trying to buy it and said, we don't know if we're going to get this done, but can you come to work? So we had 28 people showed up before we even owned it, not knowing if they were going to get a paycheck. But we all hung in there, and by Friday we owned it, and we were able to pay in the next week. We since have built it back up. I think in 2002 it was about $3.5 million. By 2008, we did $20 million. So we grew pretty dramatically. The first few years were very tough. But then we got on a growth spurt.
All right, so that's a 6x growth spurt over the course of those 6 years. But then you mentioned by 2008 you were at $20 million a year. That's the year of the recession. What happened to you through the recession?
Well, in 2009 we were at $9
million.
So that was pretty ugly. But we had, you know, just a few years earlier than that, we'd been at $9 million. So we could see it coming, and we quickly adjusted to that. It wasn't a lot of fun. We had to lay people off. We cut people's salary, but we were able to survive. Since that time, we built back up. We're about an $18 million a year company right now and growing.
David Hollingsworth is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange in this month's edition of The Ground Floor, our business segment. We're learning what it took to get Accenture off the ground floor and up a few stories before it slid back again in the recession, but doing well now, it sounds like. He is the co-founder, co-owner, and vice president of business development at Accenture, which is an electronics manufacturer in White City. Got questions? Got comments? You can join us at 800-838-3760 on the phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So is there a constant churn of products then? You'll make something for a few months or a couple of years, and then that's off the line, and then something else comes in?
Typically, we'll keep a customer for many years, usually, you know, 7 to 10 or 12 years. We have some customers that we've been building product, you know, since day one. The big change for us was, you know, when we started, our customers had been higher volume, consumer-related, auto-related, and when we took over the business, it was like, okay, these people are going offshore. They're going away. Who's going to be left? Who's the customer of the future? And for us, it's got to be low volume so it doesn't go offshore. Probably got to people that need really high quality and service. So we took a look at who that was, and it was really aviation customers, medical customers, instrumentation customers, and military customers as well. And unfortunately for us at the time, that was about 20% of our customer base. But that's what we started with. And so we really went about reinventing the company to attract that type of customer. And essentially today, those customers represent about 80% of our sales. We had no medical, no aviation at the time, and now that's the bulk of our business.
I think I can get an idea of scale here. You mentioned that you install the screens on Gulfstream, which are private jets generally, right?
Correct, yeah.
All right, but that's a market that's small enough for you to be able to provide this stuff for versus, for example, when people fly on commercial jets, they're flying on Boeing and Airbus, and those are huge numbers of units beyond what it sounds like you are capable of turning out.
Well, but even that market, Boeing's not selling 10,000 737s a month. They're selling 25 or 30. Mm-hmm. So we actually have content on the 787 on the flight deck. We've got a controller that controls some of the screens that they're looking at.
Wow. Okay. So even with the large-scale manufacturing, you find places to get some niche in there.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you have to have a fairly aggressive sales force then.
Which
is you, right?
It was me. The first 6 years, it was just me. So we've diversified that, which is good for me because my wife likes to see me at home sometimes. So most customers, again, spread out through the Western U.S. We've got sales reps in the Northwest now that handle that, and then we've got also a rep group that handles California, Arizona, Utah, and then we have customers outside that area. You know, we don't really have a sales force that goes after that, but we make contact with people and make those direct sales.
So you mentioned some longevity with clients, 7, 10, 12 years if things go well. But even so, I mean, if you bring new people in and they're making products you haven't necessarily made before, and you're offering all sorts of services through your website, this requires a lot of flexibility from all hands. How do you build that kind of flexibility into a corporate culture?
Well, in our industries, it's funny. We hired somebody from an OEM company that just built four or five different products. They came into our business, and you know our business is changing every day. We've got 40 active customers. Some want to push orders out. Some want to pull them in. The guy lasted about 2 weeks and said, "You guys are like a circus without a tent." He just couldn't deal with the amount of change and flexibility that we have. So just being in this industry, that's always been a part of it, is you've got to be able to flex, and sometimes that's working overtime, and contacting customers and saying, "Hey, do you really need this week? We've got a big influx of orders. Can we push this out?" And so a lot of moving parts to make that happen.
All right. But it sounds like the flexibility is required as well on some of your clients.
That it
you
is.
Ask them for some forgiveness or permission at some time to push things around.
We do.
Okay. So some of the processes you do, and again, I've taken a look at the video on your website and perused the website to try to figure out what I know and what I don't know, which is one list is longer than the other, and you can figure this out. I think I can figure out circuit assembly and flex circuit assembly, but I'm going to need some help with concepts like box build and coating and potting.
Yeah. So circuit board assembly, as you say, that's the heart of all electronics. You've got parts put on circuit boards. That's mostly what we did in the past. More and more customers are wanting us to build the entire product for them. So that's what we call box build manufacturing, where we build the entire product for them. Some customers actually have us drop ship it to their customers. So we have customers that never see their own product. We ship it direct. Potting and conformal coating, essentially you have some products that go out into a harsh environment. So we built some just circuit board assemblies that went onto a Navy ship, and they tested the hydraulic fluid cleanliness of the hydraulics on the ship. Well, you're in salt water, and so it's a very harsh environment. So a conformal coating is putting silicone or acrylic over top the circuit board once you've assembled it. Potting is a similar process where you cover the circuit board up in a material that hardens, and you couldn't tell it's a circuit board anymore. It looks like a brick of plastic.
So the work is very detailed. There are images on your website of people using microscopes. So, I mean, this work gets down to some really tight tolerances, it sounds like. And I noticed, too, you mentioned in the video that you get down to O2 and O1 sizes, which I think is telling me that you get really fine-grained.
Yeah, the O2, O1 size is an electronic part, but, again, it looks like a piece of dust. And so with the microscope, you can see that it's a part. With me, with my failing old eyes, it looks like a piece of dust.
So for people who don't have failing old eyes, or at least have glasses and microscopes to work with, how skilled is your workforce? It sounds like they have to not only have some skills, but as we mentioned before, have the flexibility to know which skills to bring to bear on a particular project.
It runs the gamut. So on the lower end of the skills, we can bring people in on that box build assembly where they're handling a screwdriver and doing some of that mechanical assembly is kind of where we bring new people in, up to, you know, those people putting those, soldering those small parts in. You know, some of that the robots do, but we do have some parts that have to be soldered in, and that's a skill that we do a lot of training for. There's not a big electronics community here, so I can't go steal people from Hewlett-Packard or Apple. We do a lot of training. So we've got that skill level that we'll train to. And then we've also got engineers that have degrees, and so it's kind of a wide band of skill sets necessary.
David Hollingsworth, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's from Ascentron, based in White City, an electronics manufacturer that makes electronic products that go out under other people's names. He's the co-founder, the co-owner, and the vice president of business development. So you mentioned it's not like you can steal workers from other companies. So, I mean, Ascentron is here essentially because its predecessor company was here. Has there been talk about, well, you know, maybe we need to be in a place, or does it matter in a world with the internet and overnight shipping?
Well, it's got advantages and disadvantages, and so we just take the advantages and play to that. It's a great place to live, and so we've got managers that have moved here because they want to live here, and so that has helped us. And then again, the big thing for us is we're just put a lot of investment into training our employees and trying to do the best job that we can.
So since you are essentially are doing contract work for manufacturers, do you sub out any of the work, or is it all done under your own roof?
We don't sub out any of the work. We buy, we don't manufacture all the components, so there's a lot of things that we buy, but we don't really subcontract any of the labor work that goes into a project.
You mentioned some of the aviation stuff you work on and medical. What kinds of military things do you make?
So we've got product that goes into some drones is probably the biggest thing that we've got going on the military side. We've got some handheld ruggedized computers. We used to do that on a box build. Unfortunately, that customer got so big they moved it to a much larger company. But there are some flex circuits in there, which is a difficult thing to manufacture, and they didn't want to take that part of it, and so we still manufacture the flex circuits that go into this handheld ruggedized device for the military.
Well, you know, when you describe that a product got too big, that your customer moved on to a larger operation, and often it's offshore, it sounds like. I mean, it sounds like you can be a victim of your own success, where you make things so well that the product gets snapped up, and next thing you know, they moved on to a bigger factory.
Well, it's their success. They've designed a product that's too popular. And again, at that volume, it makes sense. So we're always aware that if a project really takes off, we look at it and go, you know, are we going to keep this or not? And oftentimes it moves on. And that's again, part of the reason we focus on the markets we do, and that they typically don't have those higher volume projects.
So we haven't talked about the numbers of workers you have at Centron right now.
We're about 125 people right now.
125, okay. Yeah. And I mean, is there any room for people who are developing skill sets or could use some on-the-job training, or do they have to come in with a pretty good skill set in the door?
No, we do a lot of training. The big issue here is we got people that want to work. You know, we'll have jobs for them.
So where do you see things going in the future? I mean, I ask almost every company based on Cynthia's prompting about what your near-death experience was. You started with a death experience. Yeah. So where do you see things going now? Because you managed to build up from $3.5 million at the beginning to a $20 million at your peak, and it's like you're almost back there now after the recession. Is this a good place, though? Do you feel like you're in a good, sustainable kind of mode at the moment?
Our goal has been to get to about $30 million a year in sales, and that's, again, the previous company had gotten to that range. That would have us working two shifts. Right now, we're just working a single shift, and so that's kind of the sweet spot for the business, is that $25 to $30 million a year in sales.
So 30 million is what you want to get to. So that's it. I mean, is there no Centron East or a Centron South or anything that you want to develop down the road?
No, I don't think so. There may be consolidation in the industry, so there may be people looking out to do that and combine companies. We're really not looking at that. I think the other owner and myself are getting a little too old for that.
So is there succession plans? It's funny because we were talking about succession plans with the folks at Wildlife Images in the previous segment, and that is always an issue for a company that is, or any venture that is small and still has some of the original people involved with it.
It is. There are succession plans. We're always looking at that, not only for the ownership, but at the management level. You've got people that, again, at a small company, you can't have, you know, too deep at all your positions. You really can't afford that. So we're most of the places we're one deep, and we've done a pretty good job at succession planning, but that's we're talking about that right now.
All right, not surprised as we're talking about our gray hairs across the table, but, you know, I can relate. Thank you so much for joining us, David Hollingsworth, the co-founder, co-owner, and vice president of business development at Accenture, and our guest in this month's edition of The Ground Floor. Thanks again for showing up.
Thank you.
Good to have you here.